So was that Jim in the bathtub in Paris in 1971 or his German doppelganger, Dieter? That's right. There was a guy named Dieter that hung around Jim in 1971 in Paris. And from time to time, Jim would say, you know, want to hang out at the apartment? Fine. Help yourself. Wear my clothes. And this guy would parade around Paris and in Jim's haunts and present himself. And keep in mind, you know, with a big bushy beard, everyone looked like Rasputin back then. So anyway, that's another show, another time, perhaps. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I am your guest host tonight, this morning. And my name is Richard Syrett. Say hello on Twitter, Richard Syrett, S-Y-R-E-T-T. Thank you for staying with us into the wee hours. Let me put my cards on the table in the interest of full disclosure. I believe we are living in a matrix for the most part. And as Morpheus said, the world is being pulled over our eyes. But in order to fight that, in order to fight the matrix, we all have to be awake. We have to be vigilant. But it starts with being awake, right? While you hear do snoring lie, open eyes, open-eyed conspiracy, his time doth take, as Shakespeare said. Our next guest on Coast to Coast doesn't get a lot of sleep either, I'm suspecting. He's too busy staking out what he calls petroleum pigs, power pirates, and high finance carnivores. And over the next 3 hours, we're going to learn how you can steal an election in 9 easy steps, how big oil covered up the Deep Horizon oil blowout, how a group of rapacious financiers called vulture funds are pillaring the most impoverished nations, the world's most vulnerable people, for profit. His work has been described as educational, shocking, and depressing, all at the same time. But that's sort of his sanitized version of his bio. I like his Facebook bio where he writes, I grew up in the ass end of L.A., skipped Vietnam, lied my way to the University of Chicago, studied under Milton Friedman, attempted assassination of Friedman, worked with the Steelworkers Union, became an anti-everything activist, an economist, a ballroom dance instructor, and a jazz drummer. Then directed 7 multi-billion dollar fraud and racketeering investigations and wrote poetry with Allen Ginsberg. I was driven insane by BS US media, so I moved to UK, became an investigative reporter for The Guardian, Observer London, then BBC TV, Channel 4, Democracy Now, and others. You're about to meet a man who types with razor blades when Coast to Coast AM continues. My name is Richard Syrett. Greg Palast has been called the most important investigative reporter of our time, up there with Woodward and Bernstein. He's broken front page stories for BBC Television Newsnight, The Guardian, Nation Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Harper's Magazine. Greg Palast is the author of the New York Times bestsellers Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, Armed Madhouse, and The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and the highly acclaimed Vulture's Picnic, named Book of the Year 2012 on BBC Nice Newsnight Review. His books have been translated into 24 languages. He's known for complex undercover investigations spanning 5 continents, from the Arctic to Amazon, from Caracas to California, using the skills he learned over 2 decades as a top investigator of corporate fraud. And he has a new DVD series out. It's called Palast Investigates. And I'm holding in my hand Greg Palast Investigates Volume 2, entitled Vultures and Vote Rustlers. Greg Palast, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Glad to be with you, Richard.
Before we jump right in here, I mentioned earlier that in many respects, you know, you are a working journalist in New York, but you're almost in exile in your own country.
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of a rhetorical question, I suppose, but why is it you have such difficulty, you know, breaking through in the mainstream press in the United States?
Fear of news. I mean, what you get, you know, the info newstainment that you get, you know, basically you have a bunch of big corporations that control the airwaves for the most part, and they have a big interest in making you as stupid as possible, you know, to locking you in, you know, in a kind of dark information closet, and you know, making you dress up in the dark in some weird clothes that they've picked out for you. Basically, they're, you know, it's not, you know, brainwashing. It's kind of brain stuffing. It's the opposite. You know, they're filling you up with this complete junk. You know, we now have Ukrainian freedom fighters, and we've got whatever the latest. You know, we have the new the people we're supposed to fear each week. So It's very hard for me to do the news. I do old-fashioned investigative reporting. It's nonpartisan. It's non-nothing. I don't care whether you're Democratic or Republican or whatever the heck. I go all over the world. I expose bribery, shenanigans, payoffs, murder, killings, you name it, and they don't like it. I mean, George Bush's gold mining company sued me for millions. Yeah, I bet you didn't even know that George Bush had a gold mining company, George Bush Sr., but there you go. You know,
I didn't know there was any gold left in the United States. I didn't know there was any gold left in the United States.
Yeah, actually, well, not much left after Bush's guys got a hold of it. Did you know that the biggest gold mine in North America is in Nevada? And it was purchased by a company called Barrick Gold Mining. You'll love this, Richard.
Oh, that's my hometown, Toronto, yes.
Yeah. It's from based in Toronto. A company called Barrick Gold Mining. They bought the biggest gold mine in North America with at least $10 billion worth of ore in it. And they paid the U.S. government a $10,000 claim stake. $10,000. Now, how did they do that? There was a special action taken by Bush Sr.'s government after he lost and was about to leave the White House. Suddenly, Barrick Gold got a $10 billion gold mine. The public got the shaft. And George Bush Sr., and it's purely a coincidence now, George Bush Sr. became effectively a member of the board of Barrick Gold Mining and was paid a mint. And so that's how it works, man. And if you breathe a word about it, I reported that story. I uncovered it. I reported that story in The Guardian in Britain. And they sued my paper. They said, you know, some people might, you know, a reasonable person, this is British libel law, a reasonable person might conclude that Barrick Gold Mining getting a multi-billion dollar gold mine for 10 grand from the Bush administration has something to do with George Bush Sr. getting the job from Barrick Gold Mining.
No.
And they said a reasonable person might put those two things together. So they sued me because a reasonable person, they said, might put those two things together. Now, I'm an unreasonable person, so I would never put those two things together. I know you're unreasonable because I don't want you to get sued. So being unreasonable, we would never put those two things together. But that's George Bush's gold mine. It gets worse than that. But that's the type of thing I work on and uncover. And by the way, the New York Times, they said all the news that's fit to print?
That's right. If it's not in the New York Times, it didn't happen.
Yeah, well, the New York Times ran a front page story on how gold mine, right after George Bush Jr. came in to office, how gold mining companies were now no longer prohibited from dumping arsenic in the water supply. And the biggest beneficiary, that was a front page article, New York Times, a big investigation. They're going to get a Pulitzer for that, right? But I noticed something in this long article. They said, we don't know why these gold mining companies are getting this special deal without any mention that Daddy Bush had been paid a pile by the number one gold mining company that would save money from being able to spill arsenic. The Times didn't mention it. Now, did they know it was Barrick? Yeah, because they have the same lawyer I do, Floyd Abrams, the First Amendment lawyer. And Floyd told me, he said, listen, they didn't print Barrick's name, and I'll tell you why. Because Barrick would have sued, we would have won, because, you know, it's true, and it's, you know, freedom of the press, but it costs us $500,000 to win, so it ain't worth it, so we just leave their name out. That's how it works. I won't do that, Richard. I don't leave no one's name out. I wouldn't leave your name out if I got the stuff on the email. So look out.
God forfend.
I want to warn you. We're friends. We get along. But if someone drops an envelope on you and I find out the real stuff, it goes into print. It goes.
God forfend. I should cross Greg Palast. Yes.
Yeah.
Or invest in a vulture fund in the Ivory Coast. And we'll get to that. Speaking of vultures, your DVD, your film here, Vultures and Vote Wrestlers. You begin this fine bit of cinematic masterpiece with a flash forward to Inauguration Day 2017. I can tell the first part was put together a little while ago because you're imagining Sarah Palin being elected president of the United States.
Don't dismiss it.
Okay. All right. We'll beg to differ on that. Anyway, according to your scenario, her inauguration is marred by protests in Washington after it's discovered 6 million Black, Hispanic, and student voters have been disenfranchised, barred from voting. And you say the seeds for this scenario were sown in June last year, June 2013, when the United States Supreme Court threw out the Voters' Right Act of 1965, which, of course, was Martin Luther King's Dream Act. So maybe a bit of a history lesson first. Explain what the Voters' Right Act of 1965 was all about and how the Supreme Court basically tore it up and threw it away.
Well, simple. The Voting Rights Act of 65 said that you can't, you know, come up with cockamamie reasons for people not to vote or reasons to throw out their ballot, right? Like they used to have these literacy tests where a black guy was required to recite the entire Constitution without a mistake, and a white guy was asked how much is 2 plus 2, right? But that was racial. This type of discrimination has continued on today. In some ways, it's worse and it's more subtle. And it's not even so much racial anymore. It's still race, but it's the haves and the have-nots. And the haves want to have your vote, too, because it's just like, you know, when the kids went into the street and Occupy Wall Street, you know, the 99% against the 1%. If you do the math, the 1% can't win elections if they count all the votes. So they have a simple expedient. They don't count all the votes. They come up with cockamamie reasons not to. Now, in the state of Florida, back in 2000, when George Bush Jr. supposedly won the presidency of the United States by 537 votes in Florida, I discovered that they had removed 58,000 people, black people, and they said that they were felons, criminals, not allowed to vote, and everyone, and I mean every one of those people, were guilty of only one crime, voting while black. And that's what picked the presidency. And it's not a matter of whether you're Republican or Democrat, Democrat, Republican, white, black. You know what? If you're going to have something that we want to call democracy, we have to count the votes. And this game is continuing on. They've got a new one where they said 181,000 people in Florida are illegal aliens. Imagine they swam across the Gulf of Mexico just to vote in Florida school board elections. And what they've done is they've taken common names like Jose Hernandez, some guy named Jose Hernandez deported years ago, and they said, aha, an illegal alien. These 181,000 people, I've gone down there looking for these illegal alien voters, and they're not from a different planet. They're mostly from Puerto Rico. That makes them U.S. citizens. If they live in Florida, they can vote. And the only example they could come up with, the only actual person arrested as an illegal alien voter, was a Republican from Austria. He got 10 years to deport him. But yes,
has there ever been a case of someone, has there ever been a case, Greg, a documented case of someone committing voter fraud? We hear every 4 years it's voter fraud. We need better identification and photo ID, voter fraud. Has there ever been a documented case of someone being arrested and jailed because they voted twice?
Well, voting twice, I found four examples over a 6-year period. So about once out of a quarter, we have, you know, a third of a billion people in the United States now. So we've been able to find one case every year or so of someone voting twice. Often that's a mistake, like they've sent in a ballot and then they sent in another or something. But like I say, the illegal aliens, out of 181,000 people whose votes they try to block, 181,000, they got one. So 181,000 people don't get to vote. And by the way, if you think it's only Republicans who do this, okay, there was a Democrat who challenged the right to sign candidate petitions in Chicago and wiped out the voting rights of thousands of African Americans in Chicago and actually had his opponent eliminated off the ballot. And that, the guy who eliminated all those black voters, named Barack Obama.
Seriously,
When he ran for the state senate of Illinois. So when Barack Obama talks about voter suppression, he's talking as an expert, okay? So in other words, this is one of the problems we have. Now, right at the moment, it happens to be that Republicans are getting really expert at it. But, you know, we've had, you know, it's unfortunately, it's a bipartisan, you know, ballot burglary. And this is one of the problems. See, they don't call it out. Like when I was in New Mexico, okay, for example, I have a book out, for those who are familiar with, you know, the Greg Palast oeuvre, I have a book out called Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. And I went out to New Mexico, and what I found is the Republican Party there said that there were illegal aliens voting, and they demanded that the attorney, that the U.S. attorney, go arrest the illegal alien voters. This is to try to scare Mexican Americans away from voting. And the guy went out and he said, it was a Republican official who said, I'm going to go get these guys. He said he rode all over the mesas, like the Lone Ranger. And they gave him 50 names. He couldn't find one illegal alien voter. Mexicanos have lived in New Mexico since before it was the United States, right? So
sure.
He couldn't find these illegal aliens voting, right? So that was the Republican Party looking for illegal Democratic voters. So then they fired him. That was Captain David Iglesias. Karl Rove went to George Bush and had him fired because you know what they told him to do? Listen to this. You'll love this, Richard. They told Captain Iglesias, because he's a captain in the U.S. Navy. He's the guy, when you see A Few Good Men, the guy that says, I want the truth.
Right,
that's
right.
The real story of Captain Iglesias. So Iglesias, he wouldn't go along with the game. Karl Rove and his minions said, go arrest someone. He said, what do you mean arrest someone? He says, you can let him go later, but just make an arrest, make it look good. And he said, it's not the Soviet Union. I don't just kind of arrest people to make it look good. So he refused. They fired him. But, the funny thing was, so why aren't the Democrats jumping up and down screaming? The answer was, because he did arrest a couple people for suppressing the vote. Who were they? There were Democratic Party officials had taken away. Your American voters, especially of color, may know this one. If they challenge your vote, you get something called a provisional ballot. It's like a rubber ballot. It's like a placebo ballot. And you make out this ballot and put it in an envelope. Well, all the ballots at a Native reservation were thrown in the garbage because they didn't have the right envelopes, because the Democratic Party officials didn't give them the right envelopes, and then the Democratic Party officials said, you don't have the right envelopes, throw out all their ballots. What happens is they didn't want the natives voting on whether there should be a uranium mine, which all the local politicians had a piece of. So Iglesias had those Democratic Party officials arrested. Then the Republicans want them to do fake arrests. So this is what's happening, is that in America, we are no longer deciding our elections by votes. We're deciding elections by who can throw away ballots, block voters. And it's not a small amount. We're talking about 6 million voters is a really good number. I used to be a statistician, so I could tell you it's about 6.1 million, 5.9 to 6.1 million voters get their votes thrown in the garbage. People mail in their ballots, 25 million mail-in ballots in America. The chance of your ballot being counted is decent, 3 in 4. That means we have about 4 million paper ballots, mail-in ballots thrown in the garbage.
And many of those would be the brave young men and women that are defending the United States overseas, I'm guessing.
Oh, you'll love this one. And again, this is an example from Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, which is something called caging. The Karl Rove and his minions were doing, were sending letters to voters that they didn't like, Democratic voters, mainly, Hispanic voters, in Jacksonville, Florida. And they were sending them to the Jacksonville Naval Air Station. And they would say, do not forward. When the letters came back, they would say, aha, it's a fake voter at a fake address. And they would challenge their right to vote. What it was soldiers who were overseas. There was a guy named Prousa that we even found, who mailed in his ballot. He's overseas. You are allowed, if you are a United States soldier under fire, you can still send in your ballot. It's legal, even though you're not at your home address, right? If you're under a Humvee, under fire, you can still send in your ballot. And they literally were challenging the ballots of military people overseas.
Is it legal to stamp them do not forward?
Yeah, it's legal. But the thing is that you can't knowingly do that. You can't challenge it. In fact, the Republican Party was actually under a court order. They'd done it once before, never to do it again. And they did it again. And when I say they do it again, I have the caging list. And by the way I got it, like I said, I do the old undercover work. I had a friend who set up a joke website, George.wbush.org, and let me tell you, He got all their he got their personal and confidential emails. He passed them on to me.
All right, Greg, hold on. We'll take a time out. We'll continue to discuss election fraud, not voter fraud. We're talking election fraud, the people that run and manage the election. They're the ones, Greg Palast says, who are committing fraud. My name is Richard Serrett. You're listening to Coast AM. Greg Palast is with us, and we'll get back to Greg in just a few moments. And in hour three of my interview with Greg, we'll open up the phone lines if you have questions. We're discussing not voter fraud. We're talking about election fraud, but we'll also talk about the big BP oil cover-up and much, much more. Greg Palast here, my guest on Coast to Coast AM. My name is Richard Serrett. Welcome back to Coast, Richard Serrett with you. Greg Palast joining us on the line. And Greg, you were talking earlier about some of the people that are engineering these election thefts. And one of the names that came up, of course, is a very familiar name, and that would be a Republican political consultant, policy advisor, Karl Rove, who was senior advisor and deputy chief staff of staff, I believe, for George W. Bush. Exactly what is his role in this?
Well, you know, he's just the glove. You know, he's just the nasty little glove that goes around the neck of your vote. Like I say, he did this little creepy thing called caging, where they send out names. You know, they send letters to servicemen overseas. The letter comes back when the service, and they challenge their right to vote. They say they're phony voters. When their ballot, absentee ballot comes in, they say, "Oh, that's a phony voter. It goes in the garbage." Right, that's nice. Okay, but he's just, you know, Rove is just a guy picking up some bucks. He runs things called American Crossroads, which, by the way, under our tax code in the U.S., is considered a charity, a social welfare organization. But, you know, who's putting up the cash for this? These operations, when we talk about caging operations, we're talking about multi-million dollar operations. And no one steals votes because they want to steal elections. They steal votes because they want to steal the money. And so it's all about, remember, when you have control of government, you have control of the Treasury, you have control of police. And what that means, you know, like any investigative agencies which can crack down on your other little activities. So who are behind these shenanigans? And that's what you have to look at. And that's how I've been, you know, in my book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, that's one of the things I was looking at, and also in Vulture's Picnic, but especially there. And I go back, the one a couple guys, there are four brothers I've been tracking for 17 years, named Koch. And only recently have the Koch brothers become kind of somehow a household word. When I wrote back in 98 a story for The Guardian called The Richest Guys You've Never Heard Of. And by the way, I mentioned four Koch brothers. I keep talking about two. There are four, okay? So it's the ones you don't see that can really hurt you, as they say. And these guys have a reason to buy up elections and bend things, okay? There's a reason. They set up, for example, and people are concerned, and rightly so, about the NSA and Obama's little, peeping through your electronic windowsill, and so they can turn on your webcams, too. Richard, I really don't want to see what you're doing in your tidy-whities. But
speak, I'm putting a piece of tape over it.
I can't believe that some poor schmo at the NSA has to watch this stuff. But anyway, so we're worried about the NSA, as we should be. It's ugly. But now, think about the Koch brothers have created a $100 million computer operation database, which makes the NSA jealous and envious, called Themis. Karl Rove has put together something called Data Trust. Those things have your credit records, have you name it, that your latest, they literally know what you bought 30 minutes ago on Amazon, okay? These databases make the NSA's nothing. This is the real thing.
And presumably it knows if you're a registered Democrat or a Republican, if you're Black, Hispanic.
And if you've downloaded Coast to Coast. So what's happened is they know who you are, where you are, and probably who you're going to vote for, right? They know where you've given. They have, it's all cross-referenced. And now, if this were just used, for example, to say, okay, we're going to send out letters to all people who've bought nose hair clippers and say, you know, only Republicans know how to clip a nose hair, okay, so vote for our guy. All right, that's fine. That's legit, you know. But that's not what they're using it for. They're playing some serious games, like in Wisconsin. It looks like the Themis machine, from our evidence, was used to send letters out to gun owners, Democratic gun owners, saying, listen, guys, if you don't, here's where you have to send in your, if you want to save your gun, your right to gun ownership, here's where you mail in your absentee ballots. And they deliberately gave the wrong address. They said, you have to put it in by a certain date. It was too late. So it was too late, and you had the wrong address. So your ballot just went into the garbage. That's the type of thing that they use these machines for. That's how they create these caging lists where they knock out the votes of military people. That's where they come up with phony names. Where do they get 181,000 names of so-called illegal aliens? They don't get them from a spaceship to find out where the aliens are. Themis, Data Trust, who they have more, they know more about you than your mommy. They know more about you than you because they know who else has been watching you. So this is what's happening. We're getting basically a kind of spy state, which is being used to manipulate and to steal votes. And, of course, to buy your affection by knowing what you like and manipulating it. It is a type of sick electoral mind control that we have to very, very much worry about. They call it micro-targeting, but no, it's micro-manipulation. And, you know, and the hidden money here is very dangerous stuff. When we had the Citizens United case, Richard, which said corporations can give money to campaigns, I'm not worried about Exxon. I'm not even worried about Koch Industries. I know where they're at. What I'm worried about, you know, Charles Manson can't give to a political campaign, but Charles Manson and Sons, Inc. can. The Medellin cartel can. And the Chinese Liberation Army, which has a clothing line in the United States, believe it or not, called New Order, sold at Walmart. They really do. New Order, by the Chinese, made by the Chinese Liberation Army factories. They can put any amount of money they want and get themselves real Manchurian candidates. So this is what I'm very much worried about now. This is what I'm trying to ring the alarm bell. And by the way, you mentioned my film Vultures and Vote Rustlers. If you go to gregpalace.com, you can actually see a 95-second trailer. I'm not releasing this commercially like other films for quite a while. You can only kind of get it there through a donation, but where you can see some of these investigative reports, including the manipulation of the vote.
And so, just so I'm clear on this, that this is how the 2000 presidential election was handed to George Bush in Florida. We all heard about the dangling chads and people being scrubbed off the voter list. And then it happened again in 2004 in Ohio, I guess, when he was against John Kerry.
That's right. In Ohio, it was they especially used this thing called, people thought it was electronics playing at the computers. That's too easy to find, actually. There's no Moriarty pulling a switch. It was a bit dumber than that. They handed out. They stopped people from voting. They challenged their vote. People would get something called provisional ballots, basically in ghetto areas. And in those provisional ballots, you had to, you should see these things. You have to fill out this form. And if you sign your name and you forget to put in your middle initial, but you register with the middle initial, it gets thrown out the window. If you signed your name without the middle initial, but you registered with the middle initial, you know, that type of game. So, and if you have to put down your driver's license number, but if you have no driver's license, you can't leave it blank. If you leave it blank, your ballot is thrown out. All these games caused 135,000 ballots to be thrown out, and they were all from Democratic areas, which threw it once again to George Bush. And the attorney and the Secretary of State, they said, well, won't you go down history as another Catherine Harris? He says, what's wrong with Catherine Harris? She got elected to Congress. And then the guy ran for governor. So stealing votes. And again, you know, I've told you about how Democrats do it, too. That's why they don't blow the whistle on it. But right now, the Republicans seem to be getting much better.
I'm glad you're sharing the blame. I am glad that you're sharing the blame. Let me ask you, though.
It's everywhere. But that's one of the things. See, the Democrats play the game, too, and then they can't blow the whistle because their guys are going to go to the can with them.
I'd like to know who owns the voting machines, and I'm just wondering, what's to stop someone where in a district, a voting district, they're using these voting machines, which I find very troublesome. There's no paper trail. What's to stop someone from basically doing the equivalent, the software equivalent of unplugging the thing?
Well, that's all. Actually, unplugging is the best. You know, people talk about really fancy software games and, you know, playing games with you know, manipulating the machines. The best way, this happened in Florida. You had an election where actually it was for Catherine Harris's replacement, believe it or not, in Florida, in Sarasota. They just, there was a race decided by 500 votes, but 28,000 votes were never recorded because the machines just never registered.
Wasn't there a case of, I think, Greg, I remember you telling me about a case of someone who actually owned part of the voting machine company.
That's right.
And he
Chuck Hagel, who was our Secretary of Defense right now, was the founder of ES&S Computers, and he became a senator from Nebraska, even though he's a Republican, he won with a huge percentage of the black vote in Omaha right after his own voting machines were put into the voting districts. Suddenly, the guy who owns the voting machine company gets elected senator. Hey, that's pretty good. That's just a coincidence, as you know.
Of course. We're not connecting any dots here. None whatsoever.
And now he's Secretary of Defense, you know, so at least he gets to read your mail.
Are these voting machines? How pervasive are they?
Well, they're very pervasive, but the thing is that there's so many ways, and the problem is even the paper ballots, unless they are, they spoil ballots. So if you have a stray mark, they put them in a reader, and if there's a stray mark, they can throw out your ballot, unless you have one where it's an in-precinct reader. There's ways to get around this stuff. Like in Venezuela, they have computers, but the computer actually prints out your vote. So the computer records it, but then you take your vote, and you stick it it's stuck in a locked box, like a regular old paper ballot thing. And if anyone wants to challenge the machine vote, you crack open the box and you see if they match. So there's ways to kind of protect the vote, but they don't want to. They don't want to protect your vote. I mean, what's the fun in that? And how would these guys make hundreds of millions of dollars in fees to make sure that the system don't work? That's the problem, is that there's too many people who are doing too well making sure the system doesn't work, coming up with databases to challenge your vote. That's the other thing, is that even before the vote's counted, we get so many people wiped off the voter rolls, millions, who are, you have to understand, we have 15 million names wiped off the voter rolls a year. Now, some of them should be wiped off, you know, deceased people, whatever, though we don't know of dead people walking in and voting. That's all wonderful mythology, but that doesn't happen. But what happens is that we are taking very live people and throwing them off as dead. We're taking people like this guy Willie Steen, who was a Gulf War veteran, never got a traffic ticket. He loses his vote because he's listed as a felon, because his name matches that of another black man in Ohio who went to prison for a felony crime. We have all kinds of gimmicks to keep people from voting. Like I said, you have the Democrats who gave the Indians ballots, told they had to put them in the envelopes, and they gave them the wrong envelopes and threw out their ballots. There's so many games you can play.
It's not just about the White House, though, is it? It's not just about the White House. I mean, this is happening for representatives, for Senate seats.
Well, even more. Actually, you know, I've always said that all politics is local, so is all vote theft. Here's the irony. When I discovered that basically George Bush Jr. stole the election, it wasn't stolen for him. That system of wiping out black voters in Florida, calling them felons when they weren't, you know, making up this criminal thing, and who's going to say, hey, every black guy's a criminal, right? So no one's going to challenge it, right? So that was done to actually elect his brother Jeb as governor. But Jeb's opponent, who was strong, died. Okay, so he waltzed into office, but it was not set up to actually elect his brother president. It was elected to get Jeb in. And that was so politics, all vote theft is local. And it just happens to be that often the presidential races are dragged in. It's pretty rare that the votes are stolen deliberately for the presidency. It starts at the local level. And that's why, that's where the Democrats have often been the worst in terms of retail vote. Of course, it was the Democrats who were, you know, ran the whole Jim Crow voting operation, keeping black people from voting. But, So it's gone back and forth. Right now, the Republicans are better because they've got this Koch money building these giant databases. So they're doing it on a really computerized, high digital, super spatialistic level at this moment.
A super, what did you say? Super fragilistic expialidocious?
Kind of futuristic word for you.
All right.
Futuramic systems that they're using. But it's, like I say, Themis and Data Trust. And when those two are locked together,
before we go back
to democracy.
Before we project ahead to 2016, let me just dial back to 2004 again and the election with Kerry and Bush. And this has always perplexed me. In 2000, of course, Gore protested and they fought all the way to the Supreme Court. But Kerry, the Democratic candidate, seemed to just roll over. What happened there? Why did he just take it lying down?
Gore rolled over, too. He got when he got the notice, the information from my story in The Guardian and BBC about the black voters being wiped out, it was brought to him. And they said, oh, well, that's great. Who's the reporter? And they said, Greg Palast. And Gore's chief at the time said, Greg Palast, we hate that SOB. You know, though they only were going to push so far. And with Kerry, I can tell you from inside the campaign, because I knew John Edwards pretty well. Edwards was fuming. Kerry went straight to the mat, even though he had plenty of grounds for opening up those provisional ballots and what were called the spoiled ballots. It would have been enough to change it around. Kerry went right to the mat. And very interesting.
I remember a YouTube video of someone at a John Kerry press conference, I believe, after the election, holding up your book.
Yes.
And was he tasered at that event?
Yeah, remember Taser Boy? The kid who was tasered, right? Everyone remembers Taser Boy, the kid who was tasered trying to ask a question of John Kerry. And the police grabbed him and tasered him to the ground. He was holding my book, Arm Madhouse. They said he was holding some strange yellow book. Well, Greg Palast, Arm Madhouse, was a New York Times bestseller. He's holding Arm Madhouse. He says, according to this book, Senator Kerry, you won the 2004 election. Why did you give up? Have you read this book? And he got thrown to the ground and tasered. And actually, no one remembers Kerry's answer. Kerry said, yeah, I've read the Palast book, and I think he's correct.
So what did you,
but they
why
never
did he
answered
roll
the
over?
Question why he rolled over. He won't say, he won't tell me, he won't tell anyone. Gore has been hounded endlessly. Why didn't you use this information? And, you know, we could all have our theories. So, and you know, I'm an investigative reporter. Unless I've investigated and found the answer, I don't even want to speculate. But it's amazing because I've seen in other nations people go into the streets and say, count the votes. And, you know, whether, in fact, in the Ukraine, in the Orange Revolution, you know, these are the things, you know, it happened in Serbia. It happened in Peru. People in the streets would say, no, open the ballot boxes. Let's see those ballots that you threw away. And why didn't it happen in America? Are we just that snoozy or say, oh, I guess they stole the White House. Let's see what's on the Leno tonight, you know. Or there's something about the ruling class, because they may change masks, but it's really the same central brain. And
so,
I think that's one of the problems that we see here. I mean, Kerry is really one of them. And by the way, I don't think people have noticed, you know, Kerry's now a billionaire. He sold, and his wife sold their interest in Heinz Ketchup. The company sold for $52 billion. And so, you know, we've got a very rich Secretary of State.
I'll have no class envy on this show, Greg. There'll be no class envy on this show.
That's true. Okay, but how... What, can't they get a percentage? Shouldn't we all get a percentage? I mean, Secretary.
Let's look ahead to 2016. Based on everything you know, who's going to steal the election then?
I have the worst prognosticator. Who's going to steal it? Everyone. Everyone's going to have their hands in the kitty. Everyone's going to have their hands on the scale and stealing it. The thing is, at this moment, with the Themis machine and the data trust operation, I give the edge of vote chicanery to the Republicans at this time. On the other hand, you have to steal something for something. They do need a candidate, which they're short of. I mean, they tried the billionaires. In fact, if you see my film, you'll see a little cartoon by Ted Rall on Chris Christie. That's the billionaire's choice by far. Three of the Koch brothers, people forget about Billy Koch, Listen,
we got the music. We got the music percolating up here, Greg. So
I'll tell you why they want Christie.
Right, and then when we come back, we'll also talk about what you lovingly refer to as the petroleum pigs, and we'll talk about the great cover up of the Deep Horizon oil rig blow up. Back with more of my conversation with Greg Palast. My name is Richard Serrett, sitting in here tonight, this morning on Coast to Coast AM.